This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. Thanks so much for listening. And we start this hour with a story of reconciliation in Washington, D.C. Back in 1838, two of the nation's most prominent Jesuit priests sold off 272 men, women, and children to pay down debts so that Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. could survive.
Ensuring our history is alive to us, we must acknowledge that Georgetown University participated in the institution of slavery.
That was Georgetown President John J. DeGioia yesterday publicly announcing that the institution will make amends to the descendants of slaves who were sold off almost two centuries ago. DeGioia offered a formal apology. He also said the university will offer descendants of those slaves preferential treatment in the admissions process. It's going to be similar to what's given to children of alumni or legacy applicants now. The university will also create an institute for the study of slavery, and it's going to rename two halls that are now named for those Jesuit priests, and will also develop a public memorial to slaves who worked on the campus. In recent years, a lot of high-profile institutions have publicly acknowledged their historical connections with the slave trade. Georgetown, though, has gone further. Craig Stephen Wilder has written broadly about the intersection of slavery and American capitalism. He's professor of history at MIT and author of numerous publications, including the book Ebony and Ivy, Race, Slavery, and the Troubled History of America's Universities. I'm also joined by Maxine Crump. She is a direct descendant of the slaves that were sold by Georgetown in 1838. She lives in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and is president and CEO of the nonprofit Dialogue on Race, Louisiana. Welcome to you both.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Maxine Crump, how long have you known that you were a descendant of slaves who were sold by Georgetown? And what was your reaction to this news from the university?
I've known since January of this year. And I was told by Richard Cellini of the Georgetown Memory Project, a group of alums who formed this organization. And I received a phone call and I didn't get it, and there was a message left. And when I called back, I missed him. Finally, when he called back, I was driving toward Marengwen at the time, which is the hometown that I grew up in, where the plantation was, West Oak Plantation. When I got that phone call, when he said the name Cornelius Hawkins, it stood out to me right away that there was something real about this because, and the reason I even have to think about whether it was real is because as African Americans, we thought that we would never find that far back into slavery, our direct connection, because that they were so scattered and that sort of thing. Knew nothing about slaves being beyond the South, knew nothing about thinking about researching it. So when I get this call, I am just overcome in the sense of not emotionally overcome, but just everything in me just stood still. It was such a moment that I wanted to be in. My car was moving, but I felt like I was standing still and just allowed it to all download inside of me because it answered so many questions. I felt like new doors were open in my life.
As you reached back into the past, and the connection, Maxine Crump, does make some sense because we should point out that when these 272 slaves were sold by Georgetown, they were sold from plantations in Maryland right down to Louisiana where you live today.
Right. And like I said, I didn't even know they had slaves in Maryland. I thought they were all in the South. And it answered another question I had asked one of my cousins, who was Cornelius' grandson. I'm Cornelius' great-great-granddaughter. This was Cornelius' grandson. And I asked him, where did his father come from, which is my grandfather? And he said, I think Boston. So I stopped asking right there because he was 91, and I thought, yeah, he can't be right. I said, how did he get here then? You know, but I could tell. I just felt like not to even ask him anymore because that just didn't sound right. I wish I had now.
Craig Stephen Wilder, Georgetown isn't the only American university with ties to slavery, as we mentioned, and you've written about this. This includes Harvard, the University of Virginia, even Brown University in Rhode Island, which is in the north. But what Georgetown has done here is a first in some ways.
Yeah, there are things that in the Georgetown report and the decisions that were made public yesterday that are unique among the institutions that are dealing with this problem. A lot of the report actually repeats actions that have been taken on other campuses, but Georgetown actually takes a couple of steps that go further. One is actually treating the descendants of the people sold in 1838 as giving them special status in the admissions process.
Special status, but no financial aid, no extra help affording going to the school. And a lot of people have said that even though they've gone farther than other schools, they could have done more.
This is a very low bar. You know, going farther than other schools actually doesn't tell you very much. Most schools have done actually very little. And when you think about the extent of the issue, every American college established before the American Revolution has direct ties to slavery and the slave trade. And one of the things that's stunning is how few institutions have actually taken significant steps to publish this history, deal with it, and respond to it.
So what's the history at Georgetown that's relevant here? I mentioned the two presidents of the university, the Jesuit priests, sold on these slaves to get money. It was as simple as that. But what's the deeper history here?
The deeper history is Georgetown is established in 1789, the same year that George Washington is inaugurated and the Constitution is finally ratified. And so you actually have this really quite extraordinary historical moment. That's not an accident. Georgetown, the priests of the United States, who are largely in Maryland. Maryland is the Catholic colony that becomes the sort of headquarters of the Catholic Church in the aftermath of the war. Anti-Catholicism has died down some after the American Revolution because of the significant help that we get from the French and the Spanish. And so really what you have is actually the leaders of the Catholic Church in Maryland begin to plan out the development of their church in the new United States. And that development is actually going to rest on slavery. In fact, actually, the place that they gather to talk about building the church is one of the slave plantations in Maryland. And so they're actually sitting on a slave plantation talking about the future of the church. And Georgetown is going to be one of the first major institutions. Georgetown is going to be the Catholic Church's claim to the United States. It's going to it's a chance to institutionalize Catholicism in the new nation and protect a church that had actually been quite sort of violently at times oppressed in the colonial period. And so Georgetown's relationship to slavery begins in 1789 when it's founded. There are slaves on the campus. The faculty use slaves. The officers use slaves. There's the vice president of the college in the original rule book is in charge of supervising the servants on the college ground.
Students brought slaves with them if they had the money to own.
At many colleges, they do, and it seems, yeah, they bring the, you know, this is something that goes all the way back to schools like William and Mary in Virginia, where, you know, when Thomas Jefferson is there in the 1760s, about 10% of the boys in his class, the young men in his class, bring slaves to campus with them.
Maxine Crump, you and I are learning maybe a lot of this history together. I'm sure you've learned it in the report over the last several months, but it's really coming alive here in a way that maybe you didn't expect. I know that when you got this call, it was a big shock and a big download for you, as you said, but all of this history that we're hearing about, how does that affect you?
It has a tremendous effect. And when I think about the pain of my descendants and the fact that I'm really glad that the hall is going to be named Isaac Hawkins Hall, the hall that once bared my lady's name, and that's my great-great-great-great-grandfather. Not too many people of slave descendants know that far back into slavery, their relatives. Right. I just hope that Georgetown really does keep its word, and I believe it will, to make this history come alive in America and to support other institutions for coming forward. It's just very exciting to me to know that this pain is going to be brought forward and that we can be forthright and honest about our history.
Craig Stephen Wilder, the window that this move by Georgetown has opened up for us, some of it you've described, not only august institutions financed and operated with slave labor, but also an American economy based on the cotton business and slave labor. What Georgetown has done here is a step. It opens up the inevitable conversation about reparations. And I wonder if they haven't offered money or financial aid to descendants of slaves, because that would open up a conversation about reparations that people don't want to have.
I think on a lot of campuses, what you've seen is an attempt to avoid this history, in part because we're trying to escape the conversation about reparations. I think this is inconsistent with who we are as academics and as academic institutions. We actually make a commitment. We're founded on a mission to pursue truth and to pursue knowledge. We can't stop pursuing knowledge and pursuing truths when those truths arrive at our front door. I think part of what Georgetown is looking at, like many institutions, is that the event in 1838 that has led Georgetown to this moment is not the end of its history with slavery. It's actually only the beginning of its history with slavery. There's a
Absolutely.
Much bigger story beneath there.
Maxine Crump.
Yes. I think that a lot of people fear reparation, and then there are those who don't want reparation, who believe that reparation might end up where the United States will say, okay, if we pay them off, then we're done with it. Let's not talk about this anymore. If reparations would mean that institutions like Georgetown and many others would work to assure equal status for all descendants of slaves, because we do not have equal status. We have equal rights, but that's not equal status. We're not treated as the real Americans. We're treated as Black Americans or African Americans. And you hear the term African American community. Well, where is the white American community? That's just considered America. So it definitely means that we're not the same status if our community has to have a separate name. And there isn't an our community in my mind. From the time I was 7 years old, I remember my dad explaining to me that I was a full American. And I have understood that, but I have also understood that just because I think that doesn't mean that's how the country treats those who are descendants of slaves like me.
I want to thank Maxine Crump, a direct descendant of a slave who was sold by Georgetown University, and president and CEO of the nonprofit Dialogue on Race Louisiana, and also Craig Stephen Wilder, professor from MIT and author of numerous books, including Ebony and Ivy, Race and Slavery, and the Troubled History of America's Universities. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
My name is Gerald Jones. I'm calling from Dallas, Texas. And as an African-American, I strongly believe that we are long overdue for reparations. However, not solely in the form of a monetary amount. Everything our ancestors were deprived of should be considered for reparations. Free DNA tests to find our origin, low-cost college tuition, and automatic voter registration at the age of 18 for depriving our ancestors of voting rights.
We've been asking you, how should the government and universities handle this part of our history?
Hi, this is Cricket Lusco. I'm calling from Forest Grove, Oregon. I think we need to handle this with absolute bald-faced honesty, no sugarcoating, and free genetic testing for anyone who believes they may be a descendant of slaves. Anyone determined to be a descendant of slaves should receive reduced prices on housing and education.
And we got this from Gonzalez in Florida. It is the responsibility of African Americans to realize their own potential without asking for the government to make up for the wrongdoings of people who have long since been dead. We will never rise over slavery and racism if we pretend it is the single most powerful reason for the failures of African Americans in America. I know best. I am an African American. No one ever gave me anything. Call us. Get in on this conversation. 877-8-MY-TAKE is the number. You can always leave a comment at the website at thetakeaway.org.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.